and then one team would try and run onto the other team's side and get their flag, or the other team would run on the other team's side. So they're trying to run back and forth on each other's side, and if you were on the other team's side and you got tagged, you had to go to jail. So I thought I would spice the game up a little bit, and what we did is we had this great big field, and then I drew a great big box right in the middle of the field, used some paint or whatever, and that big box extended onto both team's sides, and that was a free zone. So if you wanted to get closer to the other team's flag, you could just go in that free zone. You could get a little closer. If somebody tagged you, didn't have to go to jail. But the trick was that if you were in that free zone, you basically became target for tug of war. And so the other team could grab you if you were inside of that box, and they could drag you outside of the box onto their half, and then you could go to jail. But if you were starting to get drug out, maybe somebody on your team would come and grab you, and they would pull you back to your, you know, so like we had kids just pulling on each other all over the place, and it was super fun, crazy physical. Kids loved it. There were some people that bled a little bit. It was good. That's usually how I've judged a game. Blood, we did it. So we'd been playing for a while. We had, you know, kids divided in half. And after a while, the kids were like, let's play, let's do adults versus kids. And so we're like, all right, bring it on. You know, like we're way bigger, we're way stronger, we're way faster. We got way more destroyed. There was about 30 adults against 300 kids. And so you'd be in the middle of that square, and all of a sudden they would just gang up on you, and there was nothing you could do. There was one point where, like, 12 kids had my arms and my legs, but I was on my belly, and they were dragging me. I mean, my face was just skipping across the grass, you know. It was brutal. Another kid, they got me down. A bunch of them just sat on me for a while. This scene was just repeated over and over and over within, you know, this center area. 30 individuals, we had no chance against this army of kids. They were a team. As a team, they were able to do way more than they would have ever been able to do alone. And if those kids over time would have started going, you know what, I'm out. One of those kids, like, I'm going to go, you know what, I don't really matter. There's 300 of us. You know, I'm going to go to my cabin. I'm taking a nap. I'm not going to try anymore. You know, I'm not making a difference. I think I'm going to go swimming. Maybe I'll just go for a walk on the beach. I'll just do something for me. If the kids would have started doing that, their team would have just gotten weaker and weaker and weaker with each person that removed themselves and stopped trying to contribute to what the team was looking to accomplish. 2 weeks ago, we started talking about the fact that Jesus has invited each of us to be a part of his team. And in order for Team Jesus to be able to accomplish all that it can be called to and all that it's possibly able to accomplish, for it to be as strong and as capable as it can possibly be, each of us need to decide to be a contributor. Each of us needs to decide, I'm not going to go to the cabin and take a nap. Right? So this morning, what I want to do, we're going to look at the beginning. We're going to jump into John, book of John. It's about 4/5 of the way through the Bible. Jesus has just finished kind of having one of these big conversations that if you read about very much out of the Bible, it's this story where Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, and they have this conversation. He's like, I can give you living water, and it's a pretty crazy time. And they have this big discussion. And then the disciples show up, and they're really concerned with Jesus' state at this moment. They're really worried that maybe Jesus is starting to get a little bit hungry. The verses are going to be on the screen. They're in your message notes. John chapter 4, verse 31 says this. Meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. Then his disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? My food, Jesus said, is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. Here's what Jesus is saying. Listen, my food... He's saying, my nourishment is something other than what the obvious thing is. Everyone else, when you get hungry, you think, oh, I need food, I need food, I need something that's going to provide energy, I need to get some substance into my body. And Jesus is saying, listen, what satisfies me, what fills me up is to provide for others. Where Jesus found nourishment more than anything else was to pour his life into the lives of others. He's like, listen, we could eat or I could do the work that God has called me to do. You can find me something to eat, or we could just finish the task that God has called me to do. So he tells his followers, the closest guys, the guys that were with him the most. He's like, listen, there's this food that fills me up that you don't really know anything about at this point. Because what would fill Jesus up was the work of God, was ministering, was providing and meeting the needs of other people. Now, it's fun for us to pick on the disciples because they always seem to get themselves in trouble with Jesus and they say dumb things. But really... They just do what we would do, right? Like, we would do that same thing. We'd be like, let's eat, Jesus, come on. It's been like an hour for Trav and I. We'd be like, it's time, right? We were like hungry. And so these disciples are like, hey, listen, we're concerned with consumption. Hey, we need to consume something. We just gave to this woman at the well. We sat down and talked. We need something for ourselves now. Jesus, you're our leader. And maybe it seems like, yeah, they're trying to take care of Jesus, but he's their leader. So taking care of him kind of takes care of them. So they're like, Jesus, you need to eat. So you're on your game so we can do this thing. Jesus, we need you to eat something now. Let's take care of us. And Jesus is basically like, I'm not concerned with consuming. He's essentially, I'm not even thinking about food. I'm not concerned about it. What he was concerned about was contributing. He wanted to contribute to the lives of others. That was going to nourish him. That was what would fill him up. And he was saying, listen, it's kind of beyond what you understand right now. Because Jesus understood that so often you and I, what he was doing was beyond our natural human nature. It was beyond the core of who we are. What Jesus was saying is beyond our own selfish motives. You and I, we're mostly concerned about number one. You and I mostly are focused on how do we get ahead? How do I care for me? And even if we go, well, I really care about my family, it's still kind of you, right? Like, if my kids are happy, then I'm happy. So I'm kind of, you know, like, that's good that we take care of our kids. But a lot of times it's still about us, right? And so when you hear somebody say, hey, we're selfish by nature, at the core of who we are, we want to push back. We immediately want to say, no, I'm not selfish. At the root of who I am, no, that's not me. Have you ever heard a parent walk up to their kid and say, listen, hey, son, daughter, listen, when you walk into a room, if you see another kid playing with a toy that you want, I just want you to go up there and I want you to rip that toy out of their cold, dead hands. We've never heard them say that. Nobody's ever heard a parent say that, but we've seen it, right? I have never once instructed my kids, hey, when we're about to get in the car, what I'd love for you to do is for one of you or all of you to start yelling shotgun and then push and fight each other for who gets to ride in the front seat. I didn't get my kids' permission to use that illustration, so I cannot confirm whether that's ever happened. But I can tell you I've never instructed them to do that. There's never been a preschool teacher that said, listen, hey, when we get in line for snacks, if it's a little too long for you and you don't want to wait that long for your fishy crackers, then you just go ahead and cut to the front. And a lot of you did that and you know who you are. But nobody ever told you to do that, right? I mean, and this same concept of for me, it's migrated to the way we buy coffee. Starbucks is good. I drink it all the time. It's not worth what we're paying, right? It's pretty spendy. So how do they get away with it? Here's how they get away with it. They're like, well, what flavor do you want? What temperature would you like? What kind of milk? Do you want foam? Light foam? No foam? A little bit of foam? Foam on the side? Right? And then if we don't get exactly what we want, could you make that again for me? Right? Just take care of me. And I'll pay you a ridiculous amount of money for my cup of coffee, right? Like that's because, it, you know, we like that. And that consumer mindset, that consume for me, that's kind of bled into how we approach church, right? If you're out looking for a church, if you're out trying to think, okay, I'm going to go, what's the term we use when we're looking for a new church? I'm going to go church shopping. Okay, like I get it. Like you should go look for a good church. That's not a problem. But that whole mindset, it's like, I'm going to go find the perfect church. It's got everything that I'm looking for. It doesn't exist. And if you're like Silver Creek is a great, perfect church. No. You will be greatly disappointed at some point. It will not take you very long, actually, where you're like, oh, nope, not perfect, right? So let me roll out a statement that you might not like. You might disagree with this. But since I'm helping lead where we're going to go, you should know what I'm thinking. So here's the thought. Silver Creek Family Church does not exist for us. Silver Creek Family Church exists for our community and our world. That changes everything. That completely alters the way we naturally tend to think about church. Because if this statement isn't true, if this statement does not describe us, then we just become spiritual consumers. It just becomes church are us. Or I church, right? Just about, right? If that's not true, then it leads to statements like, you know, I really hope we don't grow because I really like knowing everyone. Ah, you remember back when we used to sing songs that I liked? I don't want to make any changes because it's really comfortable. Be honest with you. Silver Creek Family Church, we are not going to be a church of spiritual consumers. We'll just change things on you so fast you can't. You'll be like, ah, right? No. Listen, we understand that as a church, we don't exist for us. We as a church exist for the world. So we will be spiritual contributors. Because ultimately, there's a food that we have that most people don't understand. There's a food that when we get into it and we begin to supply and share with others, that will sustain us and work within us. And as we do God's will and what God calls us to, He will nourish us as a church. Because we don't exist for us. We exist for the world. And if we're followers of Jesus, we need to recognize that as a church, we exist to bring the light and the love of Jesus to the world. So, moment of truth. If you were here 2 weeks ago, you know, maybe saw this coming if you looked at your message notes. I'm going to ask you to rate yourself on a scale of consumer, contributor. 1 being consumer, 10 being spiritual contributor. Now, I'll just tell you, you can mark a 10 if you want. Jesus was an 11. And so that means he gave his life on the cross for the sins of the world, rose from the dead. So, you can mark a 10. I'm just saying Jesus was an 11. So, right? But if everything about church is about what it provides for you, right? Does it have all the bells and whistles that you're looking for? Have there been some things as you're thinking about the church, you're like, I really would like them to change that because I need it to be different. If you're really frustrated when you pull in and you don't get the parking spot that you wanted. If you roll in and somebody else is sitting in the seat you normally get. If you're disappointed because our children's volunteers have not helped your child see how the synoptic gospels provide a revelation of the substitutionary atonement of the Messiah. Like, they need to know that, but like, if you're like, why are they not? You're like, listen, here's the deal. If it's all about what am I getting, what am I getting, what am I getting? That's near the one. And again, the devil's a negative one, so none of us should even put a one. Like, so I don't know why I put 1 to 10 on there, but 2 through 9, where do you fall? Where do you fall? Consumer, contributor. You're not going to turn these in. Nobody's looking over your shoulder. This is for you. Rate yourself. Where do you land? I'm not looking to beat you up. That's not my goal. My goal is just to challenge and encourage you to say, okay, where am I in this? Am I a consumer? And then allow God to begin to stir something within you. Begin to grow something within you that allow you to do something even greater with your life. So I think there's two ways that we can look at this, two things that I want to help us use to remember and ultimately see how your gifts are to be used in God's church. See, each and every one of us, we have skills, you have abilities, you have strengths, you have attributes, you have qualities, things that God has given you, things that you can use. And in turn, then you can begin to put those back to the work or into the work that would benefit the church, that would benefit God's church. And when you and I begin to use those things that he's given us and we return them and we begin to use them back, now we take those very same things that were gifts from God and now we make them a gift back to him. So the first thing when it comes to using gifts within the church is that God calls us to serve in his church. Within the church, he calls us to serve. And so if you're a follower of Jesus, you've been called, you've been gifted, you've been set apart with certain things that you're qualified to do to make a difference within his church. That's what God calls you to do. And the challenge is so often within the world today, we tend to understand the church or we tend to think that the church is a building. So what we need to understand clearly is that God never intended for the church to be a building. God always intended for the church to be his people. So we don't go to church. We are the church. And we use language, and it's okay to say, hey, I'm going to church. That's fine. We just have to understand the church is not a building. We are the church. I mean, in the history of churches, there was a long time, well, there's about 400 years after Jesus was on earth, where you couldn't actually legally, publicly gather. There was a guy named Constantine in like 313 AD who actually legalized Christianity. So before that, churches weren't even allowed to gather together without persecution. So since they couldn't gather together, they didn't have a church, they couldn't own a building, they couldn't own property. So they weren't actually able to legally congregate to build a church building. So the church was just them. They would just gather together as the church. They would be a group and wouldn't be about the building that they maybe they had or what they had constructed. So for you and I, it's not so much about the building. And luckily, like, we got a building that's struggling all the time. Well, whatever. We'll just deal with it, right? Like, you and I are the church. That's what matters. How that functions in each and every single one of us, we have been given gifts to use to strengthen who we are as a church, to release who we are into the world to make a difference. Look at Romans 12. It says this: in his grace, God has given us different gifts for doing certain things well. So if God has given you the ability to prophesy, speak out with as much faith as God has given you. If your gift is serving others, serve them well. If you are a teacher, teach well. If your gift is to encourage others, be encouraging. If it is giving, give generously. If God has given you leadership ability, take the responsibility seriously. And if you have a gift for showing kindness to others, do it gladly. See, we each have gifts. We each have these different ways, things that we've been equipped with, things that we're allowed to use and we should be responding well with. Some of you in the room, you already know what those gifts are. You're like, yeah, I'm motivated by this, or this is what I do well. Some of you are like, I don't know where I'm gifted. Last week I found this super simple illustration for how to discover where you're gifted. And the great thing about this illustration is that it centers around an apple pie. And in the illustration, I get to eat the apple pie, which I wish I wasn't just like a visual. I wish we actually had it, but we don't. So let's imagine we're all sitting around a table. Well, not all of us, some of us, right? We're sitting around a table and I've got an apple pie. And it's just right here on the edge, and it's a whole pie. Like, I'm going for it. So, like, I'm eating it, and it's dangerously close to the edge, and you see it, and I'm eating, and all of a sudden I take a bite, and the whole pie falls off the table and like flips right on my lap, right? We're sitting there, and you see it flip, plunk, pie right in my lap, and it's not one of the cool ones with like the crust on the top. It's like an open face one, so it's a mess. What do you do? If in that moment. Was that my mom? No. When the pie falls in my lap, if you're like, oh my goodness, that's horrible. And you're like, I go, let me clean that up. Let me get that for you. I'm going to go get a rag. I'll take care of it. You stay put, Brent. I got this. I'm going to get this. And you go get a rag. And you're like, immediately clean and put it into work. You're like, okay, your gift is serving. Right? Like, all you can think to do is, how do I fix this? Like, it just makes so much sense in your mind that, like, the only thing, get up. I don't need to be invited to help. I'm just going to help. You probably have the gift to serve. If you would say in that moment, man, I can't believe that just happened. I'm going to go get a waitress. And you go to the waitress and you're like, hey, listen, my buddy, he just spilled the pie in his lap. And so I want to buy him another pie. And in fact, you know what? I feel so bad. Buy the whole table a round of pies. Right? Then you probably fall in the line of being just generous and a giver. And you could have multiple sides of this, but usually one kind of grows out of it. But you're not looking for anybody to even know you talk to the waitress. You're just like, hey, set everybody up with a pie. Some of you would say at that moment, you're like, oh, yeah, no, don't worry. I got this organized. We're going to get this taken care of in no time. I need you to go get a towel. I need you to go talk to the waitress. I need you to do this, and I need you to comfort Brent. And we're going to get this done, and bam, 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 let's get it done. 30 seconds, we're out. The pie is clean, right? You'd have the gift of leadership or administration. Like, you just know how to get it done. You're not even having to think about it. You're just like, let's go. Let's get it. Others of you would say, dude, that's kind of funny. You know what? I totally relate. Just the other day, in fact, I was eating a pie and it fell. And in fact, let me just pie in my lap, right? And we're like, we're all doing this together. Let me encourage you. You're an encourager and you're just like, you don't feel better about it. It's not a big deal. Pie looks good in your lap, right? And you just kind of. You're an encourager. If you're a person that's like, oh man, I hurt with you. I feel bad. I can feel your pain. I'm not good at this one because I have none of it. It's like empathy. It's empathy and kindness, but it's just like, that must be terrible to have pie in your lap. That you're kind, and I'm not, but Others of you might, you'd say like, you know what? There's really a better way to eat pie. In fact, I was doing some research just this last week on pie eating. And if you bear with me a minute, I've got a chart. And then here's seven steps. And in fact, there's a Hebrew word for what it means to eat pie safely. And that if that's you, then you probably have the gift of teaching. And here's the deal. If you're a teacher, the things that we know are helpful, but if not managed wisely, are very annoying. Not the time to teach about pie eating. Set that aside when the pie is not in the dude's lap. Now, there's others of you that may say, or maybe even just you're thinking, you think this. Sometimes you're able to hold your mouth, but you think that you're like, that was the most careless thing I've ever seen anybody do. How did he not, like the pie was slowly moving across the table towards the edge. How did he not see? That was so obvious. It could have been avoided. And like you're thinking of this with all kinds of grace and kindness, but you're like, if he thought just a little bit, that pie would not have ended up in his lap. He kind of deserved the pie in his lap, actually. Right? You probably have the gift of prophecy. And a lot of times we think prophecy is the ability to predict the future, but in a lot of ways, prophecy is the ability to be able to say, no, this is the situation as it is. Like you're able to kind of call it out. Like this is the reality. Like we're not going to whitewash this thing. This is what truly happened. And you're probably always right. But your delivery method, if you want it to be received, you probably got to work on the delivery. And at Silver Creek, we have some amazing people that have decided to use their gifts. Some incredible people that have recognized, you know what? There are some needs, there are some things around the church where I can serve the church. Individuals that want to contribute and make the church a place that impacts lives. There's the Taylor family and a gal named Rainey. And I just like to refer to them as the program ninjas. Because every week we take a box of programs. Those programs you get, and it's just blank programs and blank message or message notes and connect cards or anything else that's inside of that program. We put it all in a box. It's not stuff. It's just in there randomly. We put them in there on a Thursday. And then it's sometime between Thursday and Sunday, they sneak into the building. We've never detected them. Right? And they come in and they get the box and they take it home. And then they fold the programs. And then they place all the message notes inside, and then they place all the envelopes inside, and then they place all the connect cards inside, and they do it for about 180 programs. And then they slip back into the building, and they return the box of programs. And then you show up in the morning, and you get a little program, and you're like, well, that was nice. Yeah, ninjas. Ninjas did that. And every week, you and I show up, and we have the opportunity to grow, because we got message notes, we got connect cards, because these guys have decided, you know what, we can do this. We don't even think about it, honestly. Like, one of them will get sick, they'll call the other one. One's on vacation, they'll call the other one. Bam, done, takes care of. Amazing. We've got a high school senior. His name's Jacob. You'll likely see him. He plays bass a lot of times in the morning. Sometimes last summer, he helped preach a message. He helps coach at our soccer camp, and those are all amazing things. Pretty much, though, like, those are pretty public. Like, everybody, most of us have no idea that back in sixth grade, Jacob started doing this thing where every week he would show up and he would put together the base camp pro presenter thing, like what you see on the screen for me, but upstairs for our first or fourth graders. So he would show up every week and he would get all of the audio video put together. He'd get all the songs loaded in. He'd make sure that all the visual elements were prepared. He'd make sure that all the sound effects were queued up and ready to go. He started doing that in sixth grade. He's pretty much done that every single week. Now he's a 12th grader. For those of you that are not math wizards, that's 6 years. 6 years, he's just quietly used his gift of understanding technology and computers, making sure that up in base camp, our coaches are able to successfully communicate biblical truth to first through fourth graders. We've got this kid named Corey. He's in seventh grade. He helps out with First Look, which is our 2 through 6 year olds. Corey's dad serves, and his dad has decided he's pretty much going to serve every week, and so Corey's like, all right, I'm in. And the kids love Corey. Corey shows up, and the kids are like, yeah, Corey. And Corey loves the kids, and they get along really well. And Corey and his dad, they've been able to work at this for a long time together, and it's been a great way for them to connect. You know, they get to come and serve together. As a church, however, we've decided we changed or added a policy. We call it Too Deep. And essentially, it's to protect the volunteers. It protects the kids. But we just don't want two people that are related in the room working together. It's not as safe. So what we did is we said, okay, if you're related, you need to work in different rooms. So essentially now Corey couldn't work with his dad anymore. Corey could have easily been like, well, that's a dumb policy. I'm done. You know, how am I going to serve these kids anymore? This isn't really the way I wanted it to go. I had a different plan. So I'm out. That's not what happened at all. Corey's like, yeah, I'm in. Cool. Okay. Just continues. Absolutely incredibly. Each week, just showing up, doing his thing. Week after week after week after week, investing in kids. Making a difference in our church. In your church. And I had to sort through stories. There's 30 stories easily I could tell you similar to that. Of people that you said, you know what? I want to make a difference. I'm fired up about this. I see what can happen here. I'm into this. And you might be like, why are you so into this? Because they understand we don't go to church. They understand we are the church. They said, you know what? We're not going to be consumers. We're going to be contributors. They understand that God has called them to make a difference. Little warning for a moment of tension. As followers of Jesus, if you would say, I am a follower of Jesus, then that means he's given you gifts that he wants you to use in his church at a very active pace, making a difference with the gifts that you've been given in his church. That means he has something for every single person to do. Therefore, if you are not doing the thing that he has called you to do, there's something that God wants to be done within this church that is not being done. God's called you to serve. And if you're a follower of Jesus, serving within his church to make a difference is what he's called us to. So thought number one is that God has called us to serve in his church. Thought number two is that God calls us to serve as his church. This is important. Not only are we called to serve within the church to help grow each other and move each other forward, but we're called as a church to build each other up and then serve as the church into the world. Jesus said this, Matthew 5. He said, you are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Let your light shine so that others in the world will see your good deeds. Not so that they think you're good or great, not because it's about you, but let them see your good deeds because they can see your commitment to Christ. And not because it's your commitment, but that Christ is worthy of that commitment. So that people can see a difference in your life and how you approach life. That people can see that you care so much about the world that you would do this. That you care so much that you're engaged and so loving in terms of who they are. That they may see your good deeds. Not because it's promoting yourself. It's just bringing the message of Jesus to the world. Now make no mistake. In no way am I saying that you and I make ourselves right or get things cleared up with God because of our good things that we've done. We don't work for that to become right with God. We are 100% forgiven and restored, made right in relationship with Jesus because of his grace. When we place our faith in him and his ability to transform lives, that's when we're made right. That's when we're saved. So we're not saved by good works. But don't make a mistake in thinking that we are not saved. Well, let me just try and say this again. We're not saved by good works, but once we are saved to do good works. So just think about your last 7 days. Ooh, ouch. Yeah. How many people would know by the way that you've lived that it's not just about you? If people were to look at your life, would they see that you're a contributor more than a consumer? Are you a contributor or a consumer? Would people look at your life and be able to see, man, they are so giving, they are so serving, they're making a difference, they're listening, they're engaging in people's lives. let people see your life and the way that you do good works. And then they become so intrigued that they're drawn to ask, hey, why are you different? What makes you tick? Why do you care about me? I can't believe you want to be involved in my life. I can't believe you just gave me that with no strings attached. I can't believe you want to be involved in my life and love me the way you're loving and you're not judging me. You just want to care about me. Well, why are you doing that? And then we simply say, well, I just live my life in a way that I want to bring honor to God. And I want to share his love with anybody that I run into in the world. So let's be a church. Let's be a group of people. And by being a church, a group of people that are following Jesus, right? That's what it means to be a church. So let's be a church with a vision where we love people more than we've been loved. Let's be a church with a vision where we serve more than we've been served. Let's be a church where we have a vision to give more than we've received. Let's be a church that's so overwhelmed with the love of God that we accept people for right where they are. Let's be a church with a vision that we love people so in such an authentic way that we point people to Jesus where they can be forgiven and find healing and make it something new and transformative out of their life. Let's be a church that has a vision where every single person sees themselves as a part of the whole and that the team works when everyone is in. And no one is just consuming. Consume, consume, consume. But we recognize that as his church, we've each got gifts. We've each got a calling. Not just simply to consume, but to recognize that there's something better. At Silver Creek, there are some things that are going on here that are absolutely amazing. You could be a part of that. There are some things that God wants to use you in to accomplish more than we ever thought that we could be. And each of us can be a part of that team. In just a moment, if you've been here before, you know how we walk through next steps and we're going to talk through those. And I'm going to challenge you when we're done with this service. If you're not sure where to plug in, we set up this ministry fair thing. And our staff and volunteers were amazing because I just threw at them like a week and a half. I said, wait, we're doing a ministry fair. They're like, oh, what? And now there's all these tables and all kinds of information out there for you to go find out about, man, where can I plug in? But I want to do something that's a little different than what we normally do. This morning, if you would recognize, you know what? Man, I don't think where I'm landing on that consumer contributor scale is really where I should be landing. There's no judgment in this, but you just would say, you know where I currently sit on that scale? Yeah, it's not where I need to be. And you just simply know, you know what? It's time for me to move. Whether it's one jump, two jump, whatever. Just you would say, you know what? It's time for me to find a way to contribute. It's time for me to discover how I can be more than just showing up for church, but I can be the church. So this morning, if you would say, you know what? Okay, here we go. I'm going to find a way to contribute. I don't even know what the way to contribute is. I'm going to go to the ministry fair and I'll find out. Or I'm going to mark the box that says, give me more information. But this morning you would say, okay, it's time for me to contribute. Would you stand? Not because you're committing to me that you're going to find a way to contribute. Would you stand and say, God, I'm ready. Okay, I'm ready to contribute more. And not for the people around you, but for God. Say, okay, I'm in. I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't even know what my gifts are. But if you would say this morning, God, I'm ready to contribute. I'm ready to move further away from a consumer and more towards a contributor. Stand. If that's you. Let me pray for you. God, you see the individuals that are standing. God, I pray that right now you would just begin to encourage them that this is the beginning of something amazing. Maybe a little scary to not know what they're stepping into, but God, would you give a reassurance that this is a step that you've called them to? God, that you've got something amazing planned for them. God, would you provide the avenue that directs them to the place where they can really plug in and use the gifts, use the calling that you've placed on their hearts. God, thank you so much for working in our hearts. In Jesus' name, amen.